Leviticus 25, verse number 10 says, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." This is Pastor Wynn Greer from the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina, and you are listening to the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. We do appreciate the opportunity to be back one more time, and we want to take just a moment to invite you to come visit with us, come be with us at the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. If you are visiting in the area, or maybe you live here, you're looking for a church home, we'd love for you to come by. We have Sunday school every Sunday morning at 10 a.m., our Sunday morning worship service at 11 a.m., and then second and fourth Sunday nights at 6 p.m., every Wednesday night at 7, our midweek prayer and Bible study. We are located 1 mile up Baird's Creek Road. That is just above the Willow Creek Golf Course. That's a little 9-hole golf course on the way to Fosco. You don't go that far. A lot of people think, if you think 105 South, you have to go all the way to Fosco. But we're before that. We're before the Watauga River Bridge, where you turn right to Valley Crucis. We are much closer to Boone. So you just go out of Boone a couple of miles outside of the city limits, and Baird's Creek Road is on the right, and we are 1 mile up Baird's Creek Road. So there's lots more information on our church website, mountlebanonbc.org, and it's good to have Noah with us today. He's helping, and we appreciate so much what he does. How's your day so far?
Going well. I'm glad to be here this morning. And we do want to say welcome to those who are listening in, those who are listening right here on AM 1450 WATA, 96.5 FM out of Boone, North Carolina. Our listeners on AM 690 WZAP out of Bristol, Virginia. And our listeners on 89.1 FM, The Truth, out of Watertown, South Dakota.
We do appreciate all of our listeners. And if you have been listening in, if you are a regular listener, you know that we have been studying on the subject of education, and this is part number 11, but we've been studying about foundations in early American education. And so we're looking, and we've mentioned many times Psalms chapter 11 and verse number 3, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? Proverbs 22, verse number 6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. We started out by looking at elementary education. And elementary education, very early in our country, whether it was at home, whether it was at a private school, a one-room school cabin, community school, whatever the case might have been at that time, it basically centered on moral, religious, and an emphasis on reading, writing, and arithmetic. And so in their lessons, they always had moral lessons. They did teach this is right, this is wrong. And that was emphasized early on. And there was religious instruction. There were some that were specific to a certain denomination, no doubt about that. That's always been the case and is still the case today. But overall, and especially in the broad spectrum, they were more lessons that maybe had to do with the Ten Commandments, or emphasizing that God was our creator and that we were accountable to him. And so they were just very general truths that we find in the Bible that most Christians would agree upon. And so that was the emphasis of education early on in our country, what we might say the colonial period. And then we begin to talk about a university education and how important the university is. And if you think about it just quickly, everything in our society, just about every occupation, everything like that is influenced by the university because of being the prevalence of a college education. And so just about any field that you go into, there is the need at some point for a college education. So the university affects everybody across all boards: education, political, science, engineering, law studies, all across the board. And so the university is very, very important in our society. We talked last week mainly about Harvard. Harvard is the oldest university college in our country. The Ivy League schools were established to train ministers. We talked about Harvard's first president. And at that time, infant baptism was a huge controversy in our country. And his name was Mr. Dunster. And Mr. Dunster, through studying his Bible, he was the president at Harvard. He became a Baptist. And when he became a Baptist, he lost everything that he had. He lost his occupation. He lost his job, his career. He lost his family. He lost his home, his children, which they were stepchildren. He had married a lady whose husband had passed away. But anyway, he lost everything. One of the early Baptist historians, William Cathcart, he wrote the Baptist Encyclopedia. He said this about Mr. Dunster. He said, "No man ever questioned his talents, learning, exemplary fidelity, and usefulness. Dunster deserves all this from the historian of Harvard. He was as noble a servant as ever followed Christ in times when truth demanded painful sacrifices. It is singular that such a man should become a Baptist. Brought up under other influences, having everything earthly to lose and nothing to gain. A profound scholar, capable of weighing the merits of the controversy. Nothing but the force of truth can account for his adoption of our sentiments." And so we talked about Harvard. Their motto is truth. Now it used to be truth for Christ and the church. And we talked about how that even early on, that really truth was not the most important thing. And sometimes truth can be sacrificed. It can be sacrificed on the altar of a pet doctrine or of being politically correct. And we find that although there's lip service to truth sometimes, it's not in reality. And so we talked about all of that. We talked about Harvard. Today, if you think about it, there's all kinds of Christian universities still in America. Many were started as Christian universities, or they were started as in association with a certain denomination. For example, Wake Forest was associated with the Southern Baptist. Baylor University in Texas, Southern Baptist. There's a whole slew of colleges in America that are associated with Baptist. Brown University up in Rhode Island. Duke whichever way you want to say it, is associated with Methodist. Penn State, Notre Dame, a lot of these colleges that we think about today, they were actually started by or influenced by Christian people. Back a few weeks ago when my son-in-law was here with us, he was telling me after the radio broadcast about the University of Florida, and that's down in Gainesville, the Gators, and their business school even today, as you go into the entranceway on the archway, it has Micah chapter 6, verse number 8. And Micah chapter 6, verse number 8 is a good verse to have at a business school. And it says, "He has showed thee, O man, what is good, and what doth the Lord require of thee, but to do justly, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God." Well, what a great verse that is. And so you find this evidence all across our country. We could spend a year, I guess, thinking about the different college campuses, the historical influence of the Bible and Christianity on the college campus. And if we go back and we find these things and we look at these things, there's a reason why. They were started by, many times, Christian people. And so the evidence of that is undeniable. And the foundation is very, very important of everything. Everything in our lives, if we go back to the foundation of it, go back to the beginning of it, and you will find something there. And so we find these Christian influence, these biblical influenced schools all throughout our country. But when we look around, and here's where we're going to begin to change today the emphasis of what we've been looking at. you would have to agree that something has definitely changed in our schools, both elementary and university, where once upon a time, the schoolhouse and the church house, many times they were in the same building. Now, that's not just something fictional that you see on old reruns of Little House on the Prairie, but literally all across our country, the schoolhouse and the church, they were housed in the same building. They had the same desires, the same purposes for their children. And the schoolhouse and the church house and Mama and Daddy's house were all pretty much in agreement with each other and on the same page as to how children ought to be educated. Today, though, great lengths are gone to keep the two as far apart as possible, to keep what goes on at church, what is taught at church, what is believed at church, to keep that as far away as possible from the schoolhouse, whether it's elementary, whether it's high school, whether it is the university. And we would talk about there separation of church and state and the influence there. And of course, that is something to think about. But we're just saying in general, we see this drastic change from how it used to be to how it is today. So we begin to look at modern education. And we can say this from the very beginning, the education of children has always been a battleground. And you can trace it all the way back into Europe even. You can trace it back to England and Germany and places like that. And, of course, the devil, Satan, is no dummy. He knows if he can get the young people that he'll have them for life. And, of course, there's great emphasis in the Bible of training our children. So there's a battle for the minds and the hearts and the lives of young people. Always has been, always will be. But we begin to look today at modern education. Our modern educational system is different from our colonial educational system. And somewhere along the line, a great change took place. Now, our modern educational system is actually quite young. And it is based upon a European model. Do you remember, or maybe you might remember this, but when we started talking about this, we talked about Noah Webster. We talked about the Americanization of education. Well, that only lasted for a certain period of time until this European model of education made its way back into our country. Our modern day school system is based on the Prussian school system that came into existence in 1819. And when we talk about our modern school system, when I was growing up, I remember watching The Little Rascals. And the little rascals were always running from the truant officer. You know, the truant officer, if you skipped school, if you weren't in school, the truant officer would be after you and come and get you and make you go to school. Well, that's not an American thing. That's a European thing. That's a Prussian that came from Prussia. Prussia is what Germany was before Germany became Germany. That's where the truant officer come from. Graded classes, first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, and on. That come from Europe, not from America. A uniform curriculum, meaning everybody learned the same curriculum. Everybody stays on the same page. Everybody in the first grade, this is your book. This is what you study. A uniform curriculum that is not American originated. That is from Europe and the Prussian school system. So we go from a Americanized system of education to a European model. And education early on in our country, and I've said this before many times, it was home controlled. It was controlled by the home primarily. It was God-centered, which means they learned about God, they recognized God, and they had a very high literacy rate, meaning most people could read. John Adams said about America in 1765, he said, a native of America who cannot read and write is as rare an appearance as a comet or an earthquake. And so it was rare in 1765 to find somebody in America, a native of America, somebody who was born here, who could not read and write. Now, most people do not realize this, but the literacy rate in America early on was much higher than it was in European countries, even in England, because they only thought that a certain class of people should be able to learn to read and write. But in America, they thought that everybody should be able to learn to read and write. And you find many places in our country where they educated not only the boys, but they educated their ladies, they educated their slaves, they opened up schools for Indians. Education was very important. And then I'll go a little bit farther and say this, it was Christian people that thought this great importance to learn to read and write because the gospel is so important and God gave us a Bible. That's the bottom line of that. But early on, education in America, very high literacy rate. Our modern educational system and is based on a European model of education changed all of that. Early on in America, home control, God-centered, high literacy rate. Our modern educational system is not that way. Instead of being home controlled, it is state controlled. Everything is controlled pretty much by the state or the federal government. Huge influence in how our children are educated. So it's not so much home controlled, it's state controlled now. Instead of being God-centered like it was once upon a time, this European model is man-centered, meaning there's a word for that, humanism. Humanism is life, man, without God, without his influence, without his, without even recognizing that there is a divine influence, that there's a supreme being. Humanism is all about man. And then you have a high illiteracy rate. You have a higher rate of people that cannot read, cannot write, cannot do basic math. If you don't believe that, just look at our scores in America over the years in reading, math, science, things like that, compared to other nations. Once upon a time, we were near the top in all areas. Now, we're nowhere near the top. Other countries, they exceed by far our rate or our test scores. We're no longer leading the world. We're far, far behind. If you go to just about any university, and especially like a community college, their first year, they're going to offer classes in things that should have been learned in the 5th, 6th, and 7th, and 8th grade. How to write a paper, how to read a book, how to write a letter, how to do basic math, things that should have been learned. Our literacy rate has fallen and fallen and fallen over the years. I'll introduce to you a man named John Dewey. And John Dewey is the father of progressive education. Maybe you've heard, I remember learning about this in school, the Dewey Decimal System. If you go to the library and you look up a book and, you know, it's D dot whatever it is, and it's got a number on the bottom. I can't think of a good example right now, but how you look up books in the library, John Dewey came up with that. And when I was in school, we didn't have a computer. You'd go to this catalog that had drawers in it. And you would just pull out those drawers and you'd find that card and that Dewey Decimal System. That's where that come from, this man named John Dewey. And so we spent several weeks looking at Noah Webster. He's known as the father of American scholarship and education. He was a good Christian man, a patriot, an educator, spelling books, dictionaries. But John Dewey is known as the father of progressive education. And so somewhere along the line, education in America began to change drastically. John Dewey is known as the father of progressive education. He joined the faculty of America's first teacher's college, and America's first teacher's college was Columbia. And he joined the faculty in 1904. John Dewey was a communist in his thinking. He was an infidel. Now, infidel in the Webster's Dictionary and how it is used historically. And so if you read literature around the late 1700s through the 1900s or 1800s, early 1900s, when they talked about somebody being an infidel, what they meant by that, and people would be an infidel by their own confession. And to be an infidel in that context meant one who disbelieves the inspiration of the scriptures and the divine origin of Christianity. So it was not just an unbeliever, but somebody who would be openly antagonistic towards the scriptures and toward Christianity. And so these people were, by their own confession, many times they were an infidel. And there's a song, and I can't remember the name of the writer. It's just slipped my mind. But the man who wrote the song, "There is a fountain filled with blood drawn from Emmanuel's veins, and sinners plunged beneath that flood lose all their guilty stains." That man, and maybe Noah could look it up for me real quick. That man, his personal testimony was that he was at school, college. He was doing everything ungodly and against God and his word. He was raised different from that, and he was in a little club, and they would laugh and make fun of Christians and the Bible, and he fell under conviction of his way of life, and he was gloriously saved. And in his testimony, he talked about being an infidel, and then he became a Christian, and he wrote that song, "There Is a Fountain." But anyway, John Dewey was an infidel. He did not believe in the inspiration of the scriptures. He did not believe in the divine origin of Christianity. He had an influential teacher in his life whose name was G. Stanley Hall. G. Stanley Hall was America's first teacher of psychology. G. Stanley Hall, after he'd gone to all the schooling in America that he could, and he actually graduated from Harvard, found that there was no occupation for him in the realm of psychology in America. So isn't that interesting? Once upon a time, we didn't even need psychologists. And so he went to Europe and he worked over there. And if you study this out, William Cowper?
Yes.
Is that who it is?
Yes.
William Cowper is who wrote "There Is a Fountain Filled with Blood." And so, but G. Stanley Hall, thank you, Noah. Mm-hmm. G. Stanley Hall, he went to Europe. He worked over there. You'll find that a lot of these modern educators, they went to Europe. They brought back things from over there. G. Stanley Hall, his career focused on childhood development. He was an educator. He believed in evolution and evolutionary theory. And so we see the introduction of evolution here. And today we see the exclusion of creation being taught in the schools, meaning it is excluded, pretty much not allowed. And then you find that everything is taught from an evolutionary standpoint. Where did all that come from? Well, it has a history. And there was a time where we switched from our original way of educating our children and this progressive European model that we have today. But G. Stanley Hall greatly influenced John Dewey. G. Stanley Hall wrote on the virtues of illiteracy, the virtue of not being able to read. he talked about that. He wrote about that. Now, that sounds like some gobbledygook that you'd hear in a university today. Instead of talking about how important it is to read, sort of downplaying how important it is. Well, John Dewey, back to talking about him. John Dewey was a humanist. He signed the original Humanist Manifesto in 1933. And the Humanist Manifesto is basically we believe in evolution, not God. And so everything we do that betters us, it comes from mankind, and some races are better than others. These original educators, they were racist in their beliefs that that some races of people were of lower class. That if you had a smart black person, you just studied this out in history, they called that an exception, that was exceptional. They did not believe that all men were created equal, but that the white people were of a superior race. So the original racists, if you really look at it, you will find them in the higher circles of education, the model that come over from Europe. And so there's a lot of this stuff that's really interesting. It'll really shine a light on what's going on and how our educational system changed so much. The Humanist Manifesto says this in the beginning. It says, there's a great danger of a final, and we believe fatal, identification of the word religion with doctrines and methods which have lost their significance and which are powerless to solve the problem of human living in the 20th century. Now, what that's saying is this: the faith of our fathers is no good anymore. Old-time religion will not help, will not save modern mankind. They thought we've evolved above this, believing in the Bible and believing in God. That's what humanism does. Humanism is to, and that the original humanists were, they called themselves religion humanists. They were religious, but they didn't believe that God had the answer or that redemption was what we needed. And so now you have humanists that are not religious, that are atheistic in their teaching. But schools and education have long been an area of concern and controversy. Schools are a battleground. Listen to what Martin Luther said about schools in the 1500s. He said, I am much afraid that the schools will prove the very gates of hell unless they diligently labor in explaining the Holy Scriptures and engraving them in the hearts of youth. I advise no one to place his child where the Scriptures do not reign paramount. Every institution in which men are not unceasingly occupied with the Word of God must be corrupt. And so Martin Luther in the 1500s warned about the schools. Well, he's in Europe. And of course, in his homeland, Prussia, Germany, that's where this comes from. So there was a battleground even then. In the early 1800s, Christian people were concerned about the schools and about the education of their children. One of the leading Protestants of the day, his name is Bishop Hughes. And Bishop Hughes said this: to make an infidel, what is necessary to do? Cage him up in a room, give him a secular education from the age 5 to 21, and I ask you what will come out if not an infidel? They, talking about the public school proponents, he said, they say their education is not sectarianism, but it is. And of what kind? The sectarianism of infidelity is its every feature. And if you don't believe that we have drastically changed in our country, just look at we'll probably start with this next week, but the proof is in the pudding. And I see my time is quickly coming gone. Just going to run out of time. But I appreciate you listening. We're talking about education and how very, very important it is. The Bible says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Noah's going to come and close out.
You've been listening to Blessings of Liberty, brought to you by Pastor Wayne Greer, the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. It's located in Vilas, North Carolina. If you'd like to contact us, you can reach us through our church phone number at 828-963-4596. That's 828-963-4596. Or you can reach us through our church website at mountlebanonbc.org. That's MTLEBANONBC.org.